This is The Reason Podcast, and I'm your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at iTunes and rate and review us while you're there. We are recording this at FEECON, the annual event of the Foundation for Economic Education, based in Atlanta, and I am surrounded by about 700 people, including 400 students who are interested in libertarian ideas about free minds, free markets, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it's my great pleasure to be sitting across a microphone from Cliff Maloney of Young Americans for Liberty. He's been in charge of the organization for some time now, and we're going to catch up with Cliff. We've talked to him over the years about what YAL is up to and how they are working through the Trump administration or the Trump years, the fecklessness of the Republican Party, and what they think the future of liberty is for young people. So, Cliff, thanks for having us. Thanks for having me in my own show.
Glad to be here, Nick. Yeah. Thanks for having us on.
So what is most exciting for you at YAL these days?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Young Americans for Liberty, we've always been focused on trying to build this youth army of libertarian students. You know, as I've said before on your show, you know, coming from Ron Paul 2008, there's kind of been this this big push over the last decade for these ideas. And so we've kind of been trying to harness that energy amongst young people on college campuses. Happy to say we're up to 900 chapters around the country.
Wow.
So we've been holding that pretty firm and trying to really grow those chapters and reach new people with the ideas.
What do those chapters do?
Yeah. So our chapters, one thing we focus on pretty heavily is activism, right? Trying to do outreach. The question I ask a lot of, not just our activists, but a lot of people in the movement is, how are you creating more liberty lovers, right? How are we creating more libertarians that actually believe in these ideas? And I think that always has to be our focus. I'll give Reason a lot of credit. You know, mm-hmm. There's a lot of people I meet, and they're like, well, I found this magazine, or I found this podcast, or I found...
I just left Reason, and I'm now looking for a real libertarian organization.
Right.
Yeah, I get that.
So, you know, activism has kind of been our focus, trying to find ideas and to do direct outreach on campus to find new people and bring them into the fold. So last year alone, we did over 3,200 campus activism events. So that's what we're trying to do.
What's your best event? And I assume they're not all different. Like, what are the, you know, what's, sure, you know, what's a win?
Yeah. So I think the issues that matter on campus, that we connect with, the largest crowd, probably foreign policy.
Yeah.
Talking about peace. I mean, I would argue almost everybody's got somebody in their life that's overseas.
Yeah.
You know, with troops in over 100 countries, 800 bases around the world.
And from what I understand from Trump anyway, you know, all of the Mexicans are here. So, but there's a couple of people left in Mexico. So even illegal Mexicans have people,
right,
overseas.
They've got some relatives.
Well, you know, what is fascinating to me is, like, I mean, you guys, and I think, you know, this is certainly to Ron Paul's credit. He's the guy who put questioning foreign policy and foreign intervention really on the map in a way that, you know, the Republicans and Democrats still don't want to talk about, mm-hmm, it. But, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of Reason. We started in 68. You know, Vietnam had, there were massive Vietnam protests in 1968. Students hate wars.
Right.
But you guys are like the only people on campus who are like, hey, you know, you don't have to be part of a country that is bombing and invading, you know, countries for decades now. I mean, we've been in Afghanistan longer than freshmen have been alive, right?
Yeah, it's pretty insane. The activism project, Bring Them Home, what it does is actually, it's a mock military draft. Yeah, we try to have some fun with our activism.
Yeah.
But it really, it's a spin wheel with the last seven countries. Like, think of it like a, mm-hmm, game show. I hate to say that, but that's what we do. And so last seven countries that we've bombed or that we've occupied. And depending on where they land, that's where they're, you know, quote unquote, going to get sent. We have different palm cards that we give out to them. Just talking about, you know, some of the things you mentioned, like with Iraq and Afghanistan, and just why are we in these countries? And it really starts some good dialogue. And I think what we're doing on campus is trying to start dialogue because, look, the entire 2016 election, I've told you this before, it was really not about issues. I mean, we know this. It was about her emails and his hair. And that was kind of the extent, maybe somebody in the corner screaming, build the wall every once in a while.
Right.
But that was the extent of, you know, people actually doing outreach on issues. Now, I think we always have to be careful about not being too wonky. And I get in trouble for this because people say, oh, well, don't water down the message. I agree. I think we need to be better as libertarians at simplifying the message. You know, so doing different things. And the other issue I'll bring up that always does pretty well is civil liberties. You know, you just have tons of kids. We're growing up in the digital age. And they all agree. I mean, a lot of Republicans, conservatives didn't want Obama reading their emails, but now all of a sudden Trump's president, they don't care about the issue. You know, and it's like, no, we don't want Obama or Trump looking at my bank statement or reading my emails.
What about, though, on civil liberties? And, you know, and what I was going to ask is, like, so you start with that, you know, if you start with the basic question about, you know, being against war, and there's a sizable number of conservatives who are against the war efforts, a sizable number of liberals. And, you know, on both sides, there's, you know, Hillary Clinton was a hawk. Joe Biden is a hawk, you know, so, and, you know, a lot of Republicans, John McCain, obviously a hawk, all of that kind of stuff. Is it successful when you grab a conservative or a liberal on war and an intervention and then say, hey, let's talk about civil liberties, let's talk about privacy? And then do they start backing away and saying, like, no, this, I don't want to play on this issue? Because, and I guess civil liberties, civil rights, you know, are people of the left on campus, are they, you know, where do you go after, like, with the gay cake baker
right
type of thing?
So I think there's definitely a fine line where it becomes, well, society has a role to play, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people on the left, they start to think that. And I think on civil liberties, you know, I think even like Glenn Greenwald in the last like couple of days has been calling out some of these people because, you know, they're now praising the FBI when it's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Look, talk about the hypocrisy. So, and I think we see it a lot because when you start to move towards civil liberties and then all of a sudden you get into free speech, now you're talking about the left's kind of desire. Well, somebody has to step in at some point. And I think that we connect with people on a lot of the civil liberty issues, but there becomes, you know, like you said, I mean, not just free speech, but some of these other issues where it's like, they kind of have that, I don't want to say nurturing, but they want the big brother sometimes because they think that, you know, government is good.
Right.
And they're kind of missing that. And I would argue this is how a lot of times the right looks at military, that, you know, we shouldn't question any military spending.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, government's inefficient, it's inept, and it's just not effective.
So with the students that you bring to your events and then stick with you, how much of it is that you are activating them into politics,
sure,
as opposed to your, you know, it's kind of like, you know, to use a terrible metaphor, like, are you getting them to smoke for the first time or are you getting them to switch from Winston to Salem?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So the mission statement of the organization is something we've always tried to be pretty intentional about. It's to identify, educate, train, and mobilize youth activists committed to winning on principle. Now, that's a lot to take in, but it's really four main components. Identify, educate, then train and mobilize. So the first two are what we do on campus, right? Identifying people that are open to the idea that, hey, maybe the government shouldn't take 30% of every dollar I make, right? They're open to the idea that maybe we shouldn't have troops in all these countries. They're open to supporting civil liberties. Identifying people and recruiting them on campus by that second step, by educating with our chapters, right? So that's what I like to call building the youth army, okay? No pun intended there. But building a youth army of people that believe in the principles of libertarianism. Once we've done that, that's kind of our first two steps, but that's the first pillar. The next two, to train and mobilize. So we do our training events. We have our national convention. We'll do our spring summits. We've trained over 2,100 kids this year so far. And I like to say, and I kind of call our staff out and our national leaders and our state chairs, that's never enough, right? We can't just be educating people as a grassroots youth organization without mobilizing them, that final step. So what we're doing now, we launched something called Operation Win at the Door. And this is an effort to look at what our advantages are as an organization. So if I say to you, we've got a youth army of people, and we want to go out, and we do decide to get in the political process, right? Where do we have the most impact? Now, when we started to map this out, we said, okay, let's do the math here. If we send 10 people to a district to knock for 30 days, they'll knock roughly 30,000 doors. Okay, if you knock 30,000 doors in a Senate race, who cares, right? It's a drop in the bucket. But we started to look at these different offices and we realized, my gosh, there's a huge opening at the state legislative level. And so one of the things, this whole entire operation went at the door, is we are starting to identify libertarian-leaning candidates at the state level so that we can deploy students into the district. And we honestly think if you talk to people directly, a lot of polls will show this, right? Most people just want to be left the hell alone. They agree with us on those issues.
Who are some of the candidates,
sure,
and where are they that you have either done this for or are planning to?
Right. So in 2018, we want to do 30 races. We've done four technically that are complete. So far, two of them are still, they're actually this Tuesday's election day. Hmm. The four so far, we've had Mays Middleton in Texas running against an incumbent. We won by 14 points there, beating an incumbent.
Wow.
Knocked just short of 30,000 doors. Savannah Maddox in Kentucky, she's actually in Thomas Massey's district.
Hmm.
So we went in there and we won by 26 points.
Wow.
Our third race was Matt Gertler in Georgia. If you guys aren't looped in, you should follow this guy. It's kind of him versus everybody else. They call him like the Dr. No. He's already in as a state rep there. He's
what
a
kind
Republican.
Of doctor is he?
Huh?
What kind of doctor is he?
No, I'm saying he's Dr. No. He votes no on every bill.
All right, but I mean, then he's Mr. No.
Right, we'll call him Mr. Okay. No. But he was one of those. The entire state went after him, the Speaker of the House, the Senate Majority Leader, the Governor, because he wouldn't stand with the Republicans on a lot of these bills. So we went in there, we won by 20 points, 60-40. We did lose one race, so I'm pretty proud of our record so far, 3-1. In Texas, we had another race that we lost in a runoff.
Hmm.
Right now, we have two races, one in South Carolina, one in Nevada. The Nevada guy was Ron Paul's chair and Rand Paul's chair.
Wow.
When they ran for president, he's running state rep, pretty excited about Tuesday's results. And South Carolina is actually a Yale alumni who's 24 running for office. So we're excited about that. I want to share with the viewers, I mean, the listeners should know that the two thresholds we look at to endorse are principle and viability. So they got to be with us and aligned on the core, you know, we have a survey they take.
What are those core issues? Or principles.
So this is the fun thing. It's at the state level, right? So you get to ask some pretty interesting questions. I mean, you're talking about, state budgets.
Mm-hmm.
We do ask some foreign policy questions because I'm not going to help a neocon, even if there isn't any foreign policy.
Arkansas, is Arkansas going to invade, right. I don't know, Oklahoma?
Yeah, right. But. So, I mean, it's pretty extensive. I mean, think of it as any survey that covers most of the main issues.
And do they have to score like a certain amount, or is it like you're one and out?
So there are some questions that we have that are non-starters. So like, let's talk about marijuana, right? There's everything from fully legalized to, fully legalized, decrim marijuana, support medical marijuana, and then you get into the negatives. If they don't at least support medical marijuana, we're not going to look at them.
Yeah.
Right? If they think that they should raise taxes, I mean, at a time when all these people use rhetoric on the right of, we'll never raise taxes. If they're saying they're going to raise taxes, we don't want to talk to them. Right? So there are certain issues where...
So what about if you're for legal marijuana, but you think the state should give it away for free?
If they're for legal marijuana, but the state should give it away for free?
Yeah, where would you
I would move to that state.
Oh, okay. I see.
So,
okay.
I don't smoke. I'll get in trouble for that one. But there are certain issues that have thresholds. But the party question we get from a lot of libertarians, right? They say, do they have to be, will you support libertarians? You've supported some Republicans.
So that's the viability side of things?
Yes. So they've got to prove viable. Now, there's no number. There's no polling, by the way, at these state rep. I mean, there's no money, which is good. That has more of an impact for our door knockers. But I'm willing to support anybody. I don't give a rat's behind what party they're in. I don't care if they're Democrat. I mean that. If they support the principles and they have a path to victory, and I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, I'm for manipulating the political process any way we can to advance the principles.
So have you guys backed any Democrats?
We have not. I am, like I said, I'm open to it. I won't spill exactly where, but we do have some Yale State chairs who have kind of infiltrated some Democrat parties in certain areas.
It makes sense. And at the state level, you never know, really. What about Libertarian candidates? Have you backed any LP candidates?
We will be announcing at the LNC, I'm going to be announcing an endorsement that we're going to be doing out in Nebraska. I'll let you figure out who that female candidate might be.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But we're
in that unique unicameral house.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, we stick to state rep, but in Nebraska, it's the one place we'll do, technically state senator. But I'm hoping to actually endorse a few of them this cycle. We've got a gentleman named Matt Dubin in Washington. He's running a campaign, There Is No Them, and that's his big tagline. He's a great guy.
What does that mean?
There is no them. It's about trying to bring unity together. The interesting thing about his race, there's no Republican.
Yeah.
So it's going to be him versus the Democrat, and it's Seattle. So the messaging up there is, he can go full throttle libertarian and win.
Oh, that's interesting, Although he's going to be against a bunch of stuff, right? The minimum wage and Amazon
the new,
head tax and all
the head
that.
Tax is kind of, he's trying to be the person there.
Yeah.
And actually, I haven't seen any scientific polling, but I think a lot of the sentiment is you know, I mean, that's, even people that are Democrats
they
are like,
be like, what the hell?
Right. Yeah. So they're kind of moving.
Where, two questions. Regionally, where is Yale the strongest? And has that shifted? How long have you been in charge of Yale?
2 years.
Okay. So like, where is it strongest and has that shifted?
Yeah. So the funny thing with college activism is it's typically based on pockets, right? It's not necessarily based on population, but the Northeast has always been pretty strong for us. Some of the southern states like Texas, you know, mm-hmm. Ron's kind of home, that's been strong for us. California is where we have the most chapters. But you could also argue California's got, you know, 1,000 universities.
Yep.
Right. So it's pretty spread out. One thing that we're trying to do is, or at least the nice thing about this operation we had at the door is, we don't necessarily, I mean, we can send in people from our whole national network.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do a race in the middle of nowhere, Montana, right, we can send in.
You are a global coastal elitist.
Right.
In the middle of nowhere in Montana.
Right.
Just, yeah.
So, I do think there have been some hotbeds. I mean,
yeah.
I think that campus right now is very emotional. I think everybody's realizing that. I wouldn't use the word polarizing. I just think that there are a lot of people, both on the left and right, focus more on identity politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that as libertarians as an open door, you know, because once again, we can talk about the issues. And sure, are most people apathetic? Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, we're building the leaders and the bench of people who are actually going to develop policy and are hopefully going to be cultural leaders, mm-hmm. whether it be nonprofits, entrepreneurs. But we want the decision makers of tomorrow to understand the Constitution, understand free markets, and have some rational thought that is libertarian.
So you have, well, let me ask the second question, then I want to come back to the, you know, what the campus activities actually are, because I love that wheel of misfortune, you know, or soldier of fortune. What is the gender breakdown? You know, and this is something a lot of libertarian groups are looking at. You know, libertarianism seems to be overrepresented by men. You know, for a lot of different reasons. You know, are you guys pulling in women as well as men? And do the same types of issues appeal to each gender?
Right. So I would say that if you wanted a hardline percentage, I mean, each of our events, I would say that, you know, we're probably 60-40,
mm-hmm.
60% male. And, you know, look, I'm always trying to reach folks of every background,
good.
You know, not just different genders, but different you know, ethnic backgrounds and mm-hmm. just, you know, where are people coming from and how do we get these ideas to connect with them? And I do think that for a long time, you know, when the organization as a whole or just libertarianism is seen as much more policy wonky and it's something where, you know, people are trying to quote Hayek on the, you know, mm-hmm. on the street corner.
Hayek, save him for like the third date, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
You're not going to reach people. So I think the reason we've seen this trend to where we have you know, let's just say more of a normal breakdown of society
mm-hmm.
is because I think we're getting a lot better at simplifying the message and reaching different backgrounds. So I think you asked about different issues that connect with maybe different genders. I think the more we get better at just having an intro and reaching people, and we always try to make our displays on campus, I don't want to say carnival-like, but pretty elementary. You know, we want people to be able to engage and not think like, oh, I'm walking into a book club.
Right.
Right? This is interesting. Tell me more. And I think as we do that and we figure out which issues, but I would say that I think if you look at the breakdown of genders per, let's say, degrees or majors in college, right, I think it's going to line up pretty well with our activism project. So, and I don't want to create any stereotypes here, but, you know, if there's a certain gender that is more involved in engineering or the STEMs, mm-hmm. then, you know, they're probably going to like some of our economic things.
Right.
If there's, you know, if we're focusing more on the civil liberties or maybe like the seen as the humanities, you know, it's just different groups of people.
What did you major in college?
I was double degree, math education and theater arts. So
okay. All right. So you can straddle. Yeah, that's true. And did you finish?
I did.
Okay,
I have two bachelors from University of Pittsburgh.
All right. The Pitt Panthers.
I got the best of
right?
both worlds.
Are they
yeah.
the Panthers?
Yeah.
I'm starting to fall into my Larry King era where now I just want to talk about who was the big Johnny, what's his name from Pitt? There was like a great football player from like the 50s who was named like Johnny Rumble or something.
I don't know about Johnny. There were a lot of quarterbacks.
Obviously, there was a man by the name of Dan Marino.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say Marino is who I thought you were talking about.
No. God, what the hell was his name? Who gives a shit? So what you know, what are some of so you have like a carnival wheel where you say, okay, this is where you're going if you're drafted. That's pretty great. What are some of the other things that you do?
So we did one on the Fourth Amendment when that whole conversation was happening called Restore the Fourth. And what we did was we actually had some boom mics like we're using here, and we follow people around, you know, as they're coming up to the table. It was kind of a joke, but they turn and say, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And you say, oh, and, you know, we'd have them dressed up in a suit. Oh, we're with the NSA. And they're like, well, what are you doing? Like, oh, well, you know, we've been spying on it for years. We just figure we'll be open about it now. And that would start some fun conversations. Another one we did on self-defense was called Your Life, Your Right, and we built a giant dodgeball, like a mock dodgeball field on campus. And you have two sides clearly marked. One was the law-abiding student, and one was the criminal. And you have kids role play, and you bring them out, and you got a big megaphone, and okay, here we go. And here are the rules, okay? You're going to be the law-abiding student. You're going to be the criminal. And there's one rule. This is a dodgeball-free zone, right? So we bring this bag of dodgeballs out. We take the dodgeball from the law-abiding student. Hey, you follow the rules. And we give the bag of dodgeballs to the criminal. And once again, it might seem playful, but you know how many liberals on campus are, and not even just liberal, just people that, you know, oh, well, gun-free zones are good because they're gun-free zones. And so it's trying to start that dialogue. That's been a fun one that you know, we did last year that really caught on.
What about at the national level or at larger events? And I guess there, I mean, it's more you're bringing actual members. What gets your base, you know, what gets your membership really riled up? Because, you know, and this, again, is something, you know, I think we all struggle with just in terms of trying to be more effective ambassadors for libertarian ideas of, you know, what are the issues that are really energizing you guys these days?
Right. So, I think our model is a little different in that when we do our events, I think the word used, effective, is exactly what we're trying to do. So the tagline of the organization is to make liberty win. So I think for just a long time, we've been getting the shit beat out of us. You know, I mean, libertarians in general. I mean, yeah, you could point to maybe three people on the Hill in Amash, Massey, and Rand that we could call libertarian-ish folks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's society we're moving.
Given,
but
I think each of them is against human cloning. You know, I don't see a lot. They're not going to be multiplying anytime soon.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. We went at the door. We're building that bridge.
Right.
But back to your original question. I mean, I think that how did you word the question? You said,
well, at the national level, or when you guys have your events, what are the issues or what are the activities that really jazz people up?
Yeah. So what we've done is we have six summits, and they're 1-day trainings. But we really try to bill everything as a training event. And now you might say, well, how do you get new people in the door? So our pipeline is pretty simple. The events on campus, so when we do the National Activism Projects where all of our chapters participate, that's where we're really picking the ideas that are going to excite people. And then what we try to do is get, once they're kind of into our membership, bring them out. I mean, we had between 300 and 500 people at each of these six summits. So we call it the vegetables and the dessert at these trainings, okay? So the vegetables is teaching
kids. They're the slow kids.
Right. Yeah. We got to get in their vegetables. The libertarians need to be, you know, I'm working on losing some weight myself, but we need to be more nourished. Okay. What they do is the vegetables is teaching them, okay, how do you send an email? We have persuasion trainings teaching how do you talk to normal people, right? You're not normal. You're here. It's a Saturday. It's 9 a.m. You care about, you know, Mises and Bastiat. You're not somebody who's normal. How do we connect with people? All that is the vegetables, and that's all ideologically neutral.
Right.
The dessert is what gets butts in seats, right? And that is having a big name keynote. Somebody like Judge Napolitano, you know, somebody like Ron or Rand, Massey, Amash, some of these people where the kids are excited because they've got some, you know, celebritarian status.
Yeah.
But usually what we do throughout the day is we have different breakouts on issues. And I would say at each event, we probably have three issues, whether it's free speech, civil liberties, foreign policy. And then we can kind of tailor it. And so that's the way if somebody says, well, you know, look, I really want to learn about, you know, not that anybody would ever say this, but the federal debt, right?
Yeah.
Or if it's, you know, marijuana policy or if it's foreign policy, then we can say, hey, come on out. Rand Paul's going to be there. You'll get to meet him and shake his hand. We're going to have an event throughout the day that talks about civil liberties. it gives them a reason to be there. And I think that a lot of organizations, I'd like to see them move in that direction where, you know, you're not walking in. You need to create an experience for people. Because I think for a long time, and I'll even blame Yao, you know, as we were growing, maybe we'd have an event where we'd have 50 people. And is that a good event? Yeah, it's good. But if you walk into a room at a libertarian conference and there are 400 people in the room and you're just seeing, I mean, everything is, you know, you're learning about the issues, you're learning how to be effective, but you look around and you feel like you're part of something. You're not like, hey, there's 20 people here and these ideas are dying. You know, so we're always trying to figure out how do we create that experience for students so that we're not just bringing in our top leaders to these summits. You know, we're bringing in people who they're kind of liberty curious. And they're there, they get hit with the ideas. There's some they care about, that's why they're there. But while they're in their seats, we're hitting them with the whole entire package.
Tell me, what is your evaluation of Donald Trump as president and the effect he's had on government, on the federal government? And then also, is he good or bad for libertarian-minded policies and candidates?
Yeah. I think the answer is that there are plenty good and plenty bad. The plenty good, I mean, I think Neil Gorsuch is probably the best appointment to the Supreme Court we've seen in the last 30 years. Tax cuts, the fact that I'm going to be able to keep more. I mean, if I was very open with you, Nick, I'd probably say I never expected to see it in my lifetime. So tax cuts, great.
And the business side, too. I mean, you know, stories about Apple and other foreign companies bringing home their foreign profits. So
cutting two regulations for every one. I haven't been following up to see if those numbers are met. But, you know, those types of things are great. I think what I always worry about is the rhetoric of a lot of Republicans, which is, you know, like right now they're talking about this small cut that Paul Ryan's championing, what, like 15 or 50 billion.
I think they're claiming it's 15, right? And it might only be one.
And it's you know, Amash put out a great graphic yesterday or today where it was like, you know, you look at the small circle compared to the $1.3 trillion omnibus. So I think that part of it is difficult for me because it's like, look, you know, and do I blame Trump? Well, it's his presidency, but I mean, it's the swamp. I mean, it's the McConnells and the Paul Ryans and the go along to get along. It's a whole system and infrastructure. So I'm not as excited about his results with kind of the spending. Today he came out and said he might want to get rid of the prohibition of marijuana.
Right. Yep.
Hell yeah. I mean, those are good things. But I just think a lot of the rhetoric and a lot of the, I mean, it's funny to say this, but a lot of the D.C. standard stuff is still happening.
Yeah. What about, and particularly on campus, is stuff like, you know, the NFL protests, which Trump is, you know, keeping alive in a way that I don't even know if anybody cares about football anymore. But I mean, but, you know, how does that stuff make your job easier or worse? Because what does Yale have a position on that? Or, you know, what do you do with that kind
right.
of stuff?
So, I mean, we don't take any position. Yeah. I'll tell you, it's put me in a hard place. And it's funny and ironic because I've been dodging interviews for the past 2 weeks because I was at 6 Philadelphia Eagles games this year. I'm a diehard Eagles fan. So it was a hell of a year. But it's just, you know, it's like I think the sentiment is almost like there's nobody that has a position. They're just like, hey, if you're in the politics or if you care and you're a sports fan, I mean, any rational person in those shoes is like, just keep these things separate. Why are these things bleeding together? But I'll tell you what, I mean, do I agree with a lot of the Philadelphia Eagles about their need to have some criminal justice reform? As a libertarian, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm cheering them on. I'm supporting them in what they're doing. But I think, you know, Trump has a base that the national anthem to them, I mean, it's I hate to bring up Nazi Germany, but it's like, it's almost weird how much, you know, they're focused on that because they feel as if that can get, you know, they're painting people as not being patriotic. I mean, look, I don't think the people that are kneeling are trying to be unpatriotic. I think they're actually trying to draw attention to an issue in the country that I would agree needs to be addressed.
And, of course, ironically, with the Eagles, they did not actually protest on the field, so or at least by taking a knee. I also love and Trump is, you know, I'm like you. I think some of the stuff he's doing and the effect he's having has been really great. Most of it, I think, and it's probably tipping into the majority, is pretty terrible. And I particularly dislike his positions on trade and immigration. But I love the fact that, like, he doesn't know the words to the national anthem or America the Beautiful. And that has no effect on his love and devotion to these things. And, you know, he's revealing a lot about power and about how power works. And I think if we can you know, kind of hammer that home and then come up with a better model, kind of along the lines of what, you know, Ron Paul would say on the stump, you know, back in 2008 and 2012, I don't want to run the economy, I don't want to run your life, and I don't want to run the world. Like, that's, you know, because the people who do are Donald Trump. Not, you know, and if the guy, you know, if he, I mean, we need to have like a national anthem sing-off, I think, you know, as like the final test for fitness of office. What do you think is going to happen in the midterms? Is there any reason to believe there's going to be a big shift, a little shift, or do we just keep muddling on?
Well, from a, just, you know, taking my who I'd like to see win out of this, I mean, you know, I'd like to see a lot more libertarian candidates like Nick Freitas in Virginia, Eric Brakey in Maine. There's, you know, there's a lot of good people actually that have kind of poked up this cycle that, that I mean, would identify as libertarian Republicans. I actually am interested to see what the Republicans do with their messaging between August and November. I truly believe that the tax cut is a lot more impactful than they, and maybe this is because of Trump, or maybe this is because the left kind of fed them down this rabbit hole, but I think people care about that, and that impacts them. And I think that if they, if even if they just cut everything else out and focus on that issue, I think they'll do well. I don't think they will, though. I think they'll fall into this trap of kind of this, you know, I mean, everybody moves towards identity politics and it's just turning out the base. And I think they're missing the boat that you could turn out the base and really get people to show up passionately, right? It's, I mean, it's honestly the Hillary Clinton mistake of 2016.
Yeah.
It's just thinking like you can point out how bad the other side is, or, you know, you can run on the fact that there's some label, but you're missing the emotion. I mean, what did Donald Trump do, right? He hit people on emotion. And I just think that, you know, people saving, even if it's 10 bucks, you know, money matters to people.
Yeah.
And I think the people that vote, especially, if they just replay that crumbs line by Nancy Pelosi and they talk about how much, you know, they're trying to help the American family, I think they could win. I think the blue wave will happen in certain states. I don't think it'll be some massive wave. I think the Republicans will keep the House. I'd actually love for the Republicans to have the House by one vote so that Thomas Massey and Justin Amash could control what happens in the House of Representatives.
That would be great.
But I don't, and the same thing in the Senate. I mean, I'd love for it to get closer so our people could have more of an impact. But I think it depends on the message they go with. But how do you predict these things when, you know, half of America is moving away from a political party? You know, I mean, people are just tired of the bullshit.
Well, speaking of being tired of the bullshit, I think we're going to wrap it up. We've been talking with Cliff Maloney. He is the head of Young Americans for Liberty, or YAL. What's the best website to go to?
YALiberty.org. You can follow us online on Twitter at YALiberty.
All right. Thanks so much, Cliff. This has been The Reason Podcast. I have been Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at iTunes and rate and review us while you're there. Thanks for listening.